Hi, everybody. Melissa Wirt here, your host for the Take Charge of Your Mind, Body, and Being Telesummit. And I'm talking with Melanie Rudnick. And Melanie is a New York City-based certified life coach, blogger, mom, wife, friend, and lover of life. Her passion is helping people understand that happiness is a choice and that life doesn't always have to be so serious. And one of her specialties is mindful parenting, where she combines mindfulness, coaching, and motherhood to provide practical advice for parents. She's been featured in a lot of media, including ABC and HuffPo, and we're just going to jump in and talk to Melanie today. Hi, Melanie.
Hey, Melissa. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's jump right in. Tell me a little bit about why you do your work, if you would.
Sure. I guess, you know, I've always kind of been the friend that everybody always came to for advice. And after doing a tremendous amount of work on myself over the years and overcoming a lot of struggles with anxiety, depression, eating disorder, amongst other things, I made it a mission in my life to try and help other people overcome their issues, and found out about life coaching and went through two training programs and done a tremendous amount of reading and self-work as well. And so that's kind of how I ended up as a life coach. And then more recently, I had a child about 3.5 years ago. And that is kind of where my mindful parenting specialty came from, just kind of realizing that all the concepts I have learned over the years and have applied to my life can be applied to parenting, and being around other parents regularly with my daughter and, you know, meeting moms all the time, I witness a lot of different types of parenting, and I come across a lot of moms that are feeling totally overwhelmed by motherhood. And it's just kind of been a natural progression into that area because I've incorporated all of the work that I've done on myself into the way that I parent. And it's really allowed me to kind of parent from a much more peaceful place than I think I would have years ago had I not known the things that I know now. And so it's just kind of evolved on its own without much effort. And then one day I just kind of realized, like, hey, I think I could probably help people feel less overwhelmed with parenthood and also, you know, give some pointers on what I call mindful parenting. So that's kind of where I'm at with that.
That's beautiful. So years and years of learning and overcoming challenges that I know I have worked with anxiety and struggles with emotional eating and many of our listeners, depression, for sure, if not for themselves, others are big challenges. So in the work that you did to overcome those and then learning life coaching where the emphasis is on taking your life and making it happier? Is that true, or how would you talk about that?
Yeah, I think that it's kind of a shift in perspective. You know, when people ask me about life coaching, really the way I describe it most is that it's training your mind to think differently, to kind of view the world differently. For whatever reason, most human beings are conditioned to think negatively without even realizing it. And what I've learned over the years is that you don't actually have to believe everything you think. And so the people I work with, there's a big emphasis on recognizing our thoughts and how our thoughts create all of our feelings, and that we actually can change the way we feel just by changing the way we think about things. And it can easily be applied to just about anything. So I coach people with, you know, various struggles. You know, I most recently in my life realized how well it can be applied to parenting, in addition to the other things that I have been coaching people on.
Yeah, and so with the emphasis on parenting, you talk about parenting from a place of awareness, not attachment. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that so many parents kind of go through day-to-day life attached to outcomes when it comes to their children. So whether it has to do with wanting our children to act a certain way or dress a certain way or care about certain things because that's what we care about, that would be what I would call parenting from a place of attachment. It's kind of projecting our beliefs onto our children, and I think that when you parent that way, there's little room for allowing your children to really become who they ultimately are. And, you know, so when I say parenting from a place of awareness rather than attachment, it's just kind of opening your eyes to who your children actually are and allowing them to thrive as who they are rather than trying to mold them into miniature versions of ourselves. So, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, just because something's important to you doesn't necessarily mean it should be important to your child. I mean, obviously when they're little, you make certain decisions for them. But as they grow up and you start to realize who they are as people, trying to eliminate things like telling them how they should feel in certain scenarios. You know, I witness all the time people telling their kids, you know, don't cry, you know, be a big boy, stop being such a baby, and things like that. And, you know, I kind of hold my breath because it just catches me so off guard, because ultimately when we teach our children to shut their feelings down from a very early age, we're teaching them that their feelings are not okay. And ultimately, as they grow older, they don't learn how to feel their feelings. And in the future, that can lead to issues like emotional eating, to drinking, unhealthy relationships, not being able to express themselves, not fully understanding themselves, things like that. I guess stuff like that. Does that answer the question?
Oh, yeah, that's really helpful. And so instead of don't cry and be a good boy or girl, so if a parent is in that situation and they catch themselves, like maybe they notice they're saying those things, can you offer something, like a little way they could begin to even shift to a different place, a place that's more, at the different place there?
I think that validating children's feelings is huge, whether or not you agree with them or think they should feel a certain way. The bottom line is, when any child feels anything, they're entitled to feel what they're feeling, just like you're entitled to feel what you feel about something. I'm entitled to feel what I feel about something, and everyone in this world is entitled to feel the way they feel about anything. So instead of telling our children, you shouldn't feel this way, or stop crying, or things like that, it's acknowledging their feelings and letting them know that it's okay that they're feeling the way that they feel, and kind of navigating how you want to move forward from there. So I guess I could give an example. I have a 12-year-old stepdaughter, and last year I remember vividly she was struggling with her math homework, and she got to the point where she was just really frustrated and about to break down. And I, you know, went into her room and I asked her, you know, if I could possibly help her. And, you know, she just was on the verge of tears. And I said to her, I said, you know, I can tell you're really frustrated. I said, I remember feeling that way when I was your age doing my homework too. And it's really hard sometimes. And I think that when you try and push yourself when you're feeling this way, you're probably not going to be able to do your best. So why don't we just take a break? If you feel like you need to cry, cry. You know, if you want to talk about it, we can talk about it. But just let's step away from the homework for a little while, because it doesn't look like you're getting anywhere right now. And she lay down on her bed. She cried for a couple minutes, and then without any prompting at all, she was like, okay, I'm ready to try again. Can you help me? And it was like amazing how quick her mood changed. And and I really believe that a lot of it had to do with me simply just validating that she was frustrated and sad, and that I understood where she was coming from, and it was okay to feel those feelings. And I gave her a safe space to feel her feelings and get over it. And she did. And then we went back to her homework, and she finished it, and, you know, that was the end of the story. So I think really teaching children that it's okay to feel whatever they're feeling, whether you agree with it or not, whether they're being rational or not, because anyone out there who has children knows that they're often not rational human beings. And it's because they sometimes just don't know how to deal with their emotions. And so I think really just giving them permission to feel whatever they're feeling is really huge and helpful.
Yeah, I love this piece of your work, and I think there's a real need for it in our culture, because I, in my experience with clients and the work I do as well, there's just such a, there's not a lot of understanding of how to work with emotion. So I love what you're describing and about how you offer validation and space for the emotion to just flow, and then when that happens, it seems like kids are able to move through it and jump right back in.
Mm-hmm.
What a great outcome.
And it's actually pretty amazing how quickly,
yeah.
I always think of the word resilience when I think of kids, because, mm-hmm. I mean, at
yep.
different ages, it passes at, you know, different speeds. Like, I know with my three-year-old, you know, sometimes I joke that she's, like, manic, because one minute she's hysterically mm-hmm. crying about something, and the next minute she's hysterically laughing, and it's like, she just works through her feelings so quickly.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wish that I could, you know,
sure.
Flip a switch like that and be in a happy mood when I'm feeling down. But, you know, it really is true that if we just feel our feelings, no feeling lasts forever. And if you go through it, then, you know, you can move forward rather than suppressing it. Because generally when we suppress our feelings, they tend to resurface at other points in time.
Yeah, that's when I think we end up, tell me what your experience is, but in my experience, mm-hmm. that's where we end up with, you know, screaming over something that just makes no sense at all, or, you know, it can be us or our kids having a reaction that just is out of proportion or not making sense
mm-hmm.
in the moment, because it's coming from a place where things have built up and not been recognized or given the space they need to move on through.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I imagine, so you work with parents who have kids, and so when parents come to you, mm-hmm. what is it they want more of or less of in their life?
You know, I often work with mothers that are feeling just really overwhelmed with everything that they want to get done, everything they think they should be doing. A lot of people who feel like they're doing so much, yet they're not doing enough. So, you know, in addition, you know, I'm not a child psychologist. I'm not, you know, a children's expert per se as far as, you know, how to handle specific situations. But what I do offer is kind of different ways of approaching parenthood. And a lot of the coaching I do ends up being more about the parents than about the kids, because when we walk around all day thinking, you know, I'm not a good mom, or I'm not doing enough, or this mom is doing so much more than I am, and I should be doing this, those thoughts are really painful. And the more we walk around saying things like that to ourselves, the worse we feel. And so a lot of the work that I do with the parents that I work with is cleaning up their own thoughts so that they feel better about themselves. Because when we feel better about ourselves, then we can approach just about everything in life with much more calm and ease. You know, it's interesting because I always talk about with my weight loss clients, you know, they all come to me wanting to talk about food and their diet and all that stuff, and we end up talking about everything except that once we really get into the coaching. And the same is with the parenting, because it really comes down to the thoughts we walk around with all day. So, you know, when you apply it to parenting, another example I like to use a lot is, you know, anyone who has or have ever had a 3-year-old knows that the tantrums can be just totally crazy. I always joke, I don't know where the saying terrible twos came from, because I think 3 is way more intense. But, it's really easy to just lose your cool in a moment where your child, no matter what age they are, is having a complete meltdown. But when I can look at my daughter and think things like, she's only 3 and this is really normal behavior for a 3-year-old, or if I think she doesn't know how to handle her emotions right now and this is the only way she knows how to express it, or I think she clearly needs my attention right now, or she needs my love right now. When I think things like that, it's so much easier for me to get through the tantrums, even though I'm not actually experiencing it, but I'm on the outside witnessing it and having to deal with it, than it is if I were to look at her thinking, what the hell is wrong with her? Why can't she just stop? I can't take this anymore. She's driving me crazy. Things like that are only going to escalate the situation. And when you think things like that, parents tend to lose their cool, and they tend to yell, and that generally escalates the situation even more. And so really working on your thoughts in those moments, first dealing with, learning to observe your thoughts, but then bringing awareness in those situations where you feel like you just can't take it anymore, and trying to think about things differently. And when you think about things in a different way, your mood will shift, and getting through those difficult moments becomes much easier. Mm-hmm. And they actually subside much quicker, too, because when we lose our cool, for whoever's listening, if you have kids, we've all witnessed it before. We lose our cool, and then, our children get more hysterical. So no one benefits when that happens. So really just kind of observing our thinking and changing the way we think in those moments of overwhelm. But then also just on a day-to-day basis, kind of validating everything that we are doing. So many moms come to me saying, like, I'm not doing enough. And then I ask them to give me a list of everything that they did for their child that day. And, they have a huge laundry list. So it's kind of opening people's eyes also to all of the wonderful things that they are doing, rather than focusing on, what they should be doing better or what more they could be doing.
Yeah. It's the whole getting off your own back and on your own side, really, because that mm-hmm. changes how you feel about everything you're doing, and for sure parenting. I wanted to circle back around just for a second to the example you were talking about, because I think it's a great one. Little kids, or even with a 12-year-old, it's like when a parent notices that they're going into a situation where they're gonna they've gotten into an emotional state. Sometimes we call it triggered. So they're noticing their emotions are going up as they're interacting with either the 12-year-old or the 3-year-old. Do you encourage them to take a minute away to attend to themselves before they even, get in there mm-hmm. with their child? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I suggest it often, and I do it myself. There's definitely, I have moments where I really feel like I can't do this right now. And if there's other help available, there have been times where I've just said to my husband, I don't have the patience for this right now. Can you please give her a bath? And I'll remove myself from the situation. Or, I've told, it's a little more difficult with the younger children. My 3-year-old doesn't really understand, but there have been times where I've, said, mommy needs a little time right now. And then, we'll come back together and we'll play. Again, it's a little more challenging with a 3-year-old. But, because I think that stepping away, and this is true in any relationship, it's not just with children, you could do this with a partner as well. Stepping away gives you a moment to kind of reflect on what's going on so you're not as reactive. And you can kind of approach things from
a state of awareness rather than just reacting. I just lost my train of thought.
I understand, because that awareness, I think, is where it allows somebody, if you're teaching them how to pay attention to what they're thinking, they get that moment mm-hmm. to check in and figure out what's really important. How do they want
yeah.
to think?
Yeah. And I just remember what I was going to say. I think it also sets a really good example for our children to not just explode and freak out and react in the moment. You know, I think that it sets a really good example of, you know, oh, you know, mommy's upset right now. And you can even explain that. You know, mommy's feeling really frustrated right now. I just need a minute to calm down before we deal with this. And I think that when kids witness stuff like that, you know, so many parents spend so much time just preaching to their children, telling them what to do nonstop all day long. And really the best way to teach is to lead by example. So, you know, we can't expect our children to act calm in situations when they're upset if we explode. So when you model the behavior of taking a moment to calm down, take a few breaths, step away from the situation, you know, that's the best way to teach, which is actually another thing that I'm really big on, is, you know, working on your own stuff so you can model the type of behavior that you want to teach your children rather than just kind of preaching to them all the time. Because they learn so much more by observation than listening. You know, we all do.
Yes, for sure. For sure. I love that. So I'm curious, too. I have two more questions. How does mindfulness help with the big three of parenting young kids, toileting, eating, and sleeping? How does it help parents deal with those challenges?
I'm sorry, with what? With toilet training, eating, and sleeping?
Any of those areas that you find that...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if I just lucked out with my three-year-old when it came to potty training, but I took the approach of, I'll introduce it to her, but when she's ready, it'll be easy. And it was. I introduced potty training to her about 18 months, and we just had the toilet up, you know, in the bathroom, and she would sit on it before her bath, and if she went, it was great, and if she didn't, it was no big deal. And I didn't really start pushing it until she started expressing interest. And once she started expressing interest, that meant to me that she was ready, and it was a breeze. It really was. It was easy at that point. I mean, not to say that there weren't accidents here and there, but I really think, you know, that example actually is a really good one that you can apply to most things with kids. And I actually had a conversation with a friend about it recently, with in regards to swimming, actually, because I was feeling concerned that I needed to put my daughter in swim lessons. And you know, she was saying how with her son, he just one day, like, wanted to take his floaties off. He was just ready. And, you know, I think that we as adults even feel that way in certain areas of our lives, that things are just easy when we actually feel ready for them. And so, I mean, with something like potty training, again, I'm no expert, but with my own personal experience, I really think waiting for your child to kind of give you signals that they're actually ready. You know, and I took this approach from infancy on with various things, you know, looking for signals that my daughter was tired when she was an infant, you know, looking for that yawn or rubbing the eyes and acknowledging, oh, that means I should put her in her crib to take a nap, things like that. So with potty training, I thought waiting until she showed signals that she was ready. Eating is a tough one for a lot of people. My daughter happens to be a pretty good eater, but I definitely have moments of stress where, you know, we'll sit down for a meal and she'll barely eat anything. And I just, you know, going back to working on our own thoughts about things, no kid is going to starve themselves. So, and I'm a big believer, you know, with my own personal food issues and my weight loss clients, I'm a big believer in eating when you're hungry and not eating when you're not hungry. And so I never, ever, 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 ever would tell my daughter to finish everything that's on her plate. And I really feel strongly that if she's hungry, she'll eat. And it's true. I mean, some days she will eat like, you know, a 190-pound man. I mean, it's kind of hysterical, actually. When she's hungry, or she's going through a growth spurt, the amount of food she consumes is, like, not normal. But then there's other times she sits down at the table, and, you know, she barely touches her dinner. And I, you know, I always ask her to check in with her body, you know, ask her, you know, baby, is your tummy hungry? Is your tummy full? You know, if she's eating sweets, I always tell her, you know, you don't have to finish it. If your tummy's full, we can save it for tomorrow. And so I think I'm teaching her from a pretty early age to really listen to her body. And I allow her to, because I don't, you know, I'm not into the, you know, you have to finish this, or, you know, X, Y, Z, or, you know, you have to take four more bites and then, you know, you can have dessert. I mean, obviously if she wants dessert and she has room for dessert and she's not eating her dinner, I might suggest something like that, but in general, you know, I choose to think thoughts like, if she's hungry, she will eat. You know, I mean, at three, she's not in a place where she's thinking about anything other than that. She's not thinking about dieting. She's not thinking about her body. She's not thinking about what's healthy. Mm-hmm. She's just thinking about whether or not she's hungry or she wants to eat. And so, again, I don't think any small child, at least, would starve themselves. So, you know, I'm a big believer in, if she's hungry, let her eat. And obviously, if they're not eating during meals, you know, you might want to cut back on snacking and stuff like that and kind of take a look at things. But I'm big on teaching from an early, well, not even teaching, because kids eat when they're hungry and they don't when they're not. It's allowing them to remember that, because we live in a society where we're taught from a very early age to finish everything on our plate, or, you know, don't eat that or you'll get fat. And I really want to teach her to just listen to her body, because I think that's huge when it comes to eating for, like, long-term effects.
Yeah, it just sounds like you have a really inherent...
What's that?
No, that's okay. It sounds like you have a really inherent trust, or a trust in her inherent connection to her body and ability to regulate that by staying in touch with it. And so that's giving her a lot of connection with herself from a very early age. That sounds like a good strategy.
Well, you know, I believe we're all born with it. I just think that most people lose touch with it. So if I can, you know, nurture that part that's already in her, you know, that's what I try and do. And I try and trust. And listen, it's not easy breezy all the time. And sometimes I look at her and I'm like, why isn't she eating? You know, but I just kind of check my thoughts, and I realize, like, okay, like, she's actually listening to her body, or right now she just doesn't feel like eating, and that's okay, because when she needs to eat, she will. You know, that's not to mean that it's a free-for-all, she can't snack all day long, you know, if she's not eating her meals, but, you know, when it comes to mealtime, it's, you know, it's all about kind of being okay with whatever she needs. And then as far as sleeping, you know, I guess, again, you know, I'm no expert. I can only speak from my own personal experience. I was really big on scheduling, and I did sleep training from an early age. I think kids do really well with routine, but there's a lot of different philosophies out there. So I think that everyone has a right to choose what works for them and their family. And, you know, to be, you know what, I'll say, be okay with whatever you choose, because I think that, you know, when it comes to parenting, so many people are wanting to figure out what everybody else is doing and what's the right thing to do, and really kind of navigating what you think is good for you and your family and your child. You know, for us, sleep training from an early age felt right, and she's been an awesome sleeper since, you know, about 4 months old, and, you know, she sleeps almost 12 hours every night, and, you know, it's not an issue. You know, we're at an age where she kind of tries to delay the process of going to sleep a little bit. You know, mommy, just one more thing. I have one more question. One more kiss, one more hug. Stay with me, lay with me. And, you know, in those situations, I kind of go back to the whole validating thing and, you know, just let her know that I love her and that I'm here if she needs me. And, you know, I set boundaries, I guess I should say, you know, I'm going to give you 3 more kisses or 1 more book, and then I'm going to, you know, kind of letting her know, you know, I'm going to leave your room after we do, you know, 2 books and 4 kisses. Or actually a great bedtime routine that I actually started doing about a year ago prior, maybe, it was probably about a year ago, is asking her what her favorite part of the day is before bedtime. And that's one of our most favorite parts of the day, is just kind of thinking about our days and talking about what we enjoy. And, you know, sometimes she actually tells me what her sad part of the day was too. And I just, you know, I welcome that because I think it's a really nice time to just kind of talk about whatever's going on in our minds at that time. And I, you know, hope that it continues as she gets older because I really enjoy that. But I think having a routine is good when it comes to sleep. I think it's good for them. I mean, kids need sleep.
So it's great. So the combination of mindfulness, like parents using it to be with their children and also to be with themselves is what I hear as a theme that runs through all of your work. It's really helping parents use those skills in lots of ways, the skill of mindfulness or the ability to be mindful.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a big believer if, you know, you're not happy as a parent, your kid is not going to be happy, your spouse is not going to be happy. You know, it's a trickle-down effect. Kids especially feed off of our energy, and so taking care of yourself is key. So, I mean, obviously our children are a priority, you know, all these, you know, parents out there, but I think taking care of yourself is just as important, if not more at times, because if you're not taking care of yourself, you know, it's much easier to just kind of lose it and, you know, parent from a place that doesn't feel so good to anybody. So I definitely think taking care of yourself and all that is very important.
You know, I have one more question I want to ask you, because I know you have a 12-year-old girl in your life, and I have an 11-year-old girl in mine, and I just wanted to see, I find it really challenging sometimes to explain the complexities of social relations amongst girls in a way that feels really empowering to her. And I'm just wondering if you have had any encounters with that or any tips or techniques that you feel like really, that really help there.
You know, I guess I should say I'm fortunate that my stepdaughter really hasn't had too many issues in that area, so I haven't actually had to deal with much. But, you know, my gut thoughts are really explaining that we're all different and we all think differently. And, you know, I really stress being nice to people and trying to remember that you don't know where – you know, what's going on in their lives. And it's tricky with kids. You know, you obviously have to keep it much more simple than you would with an adult. But, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, actually, she got upset because she wasn't invited to a birthday party.
Yeah.
And I just remember having a conversation with her about, you know, you don't know what the reason why you weren't invited. You know, I mean, obviously you think it's because she didn't like you enough to invite you. But maybe it was because her parents told her she could only invite three people. Or maybe she was nervous if she invited you that it would hurt someone else's feelings if she didn't invite them. Or maybe, you know, her family didn't have enough money to throw a big birthday party this year. And so I just gave her some examples of the possibilities of things being different than what she thought they were in her head. You know, as an adult, I would say, you know, what are you making that to me? But, you know, with a child, they might not understand that. And so, you know, maybe just asking, you know, what are your thoughts about this? And then asking, is it possible that maybe that's not true and that this could be true? And just kind of shedding the light on the fact that we never really know what's going on with people. And, you know, if someone's, I usually think, you know, as an adult, if someone's nasty to me for any reason, I usually kind of look at it as, you know, that person's probably not very happy. You know, she probably isn't feeling good inside. And let's try to have, you know, I try to have compassion for those people rather than getting angry. And so So, you know, again, yeah, you kind of have to gauge the level of maturity with the child that you're dealing with. But I think just kind of teaching that you can look at things from a different perspective, and that everybody's coming from a different place, and you just try and be the best person that you can be. I might have a different experience when the day comes that I have to deal with it, but I guess, you know, that's kind of what comes up for me when you ask about that.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant, because I think that's what's so hard. Kids can be so convinced that, right, that there is only one way of thinking about something. And so, and as a parent, I can get really hooked into, I get sucked into believing the story that they've, you know, that they've come up with. But I love the mm-hmm. idea of helping her see possibilities she hadn't mm-hmm. thought of, because mm-hmm. that's the truth, that we all do think differently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Melanie, I just love all that you're offering for mindful parenting and creating more happiness for all of us. And
thanks.
I wanted to mention, yeah, that people can get in touch with you through your website, melanierudnick.com. That's Melanie, RUDNICK.com. And you've got a free offer there for them if you'd like to tell people about your happiness cheat sheet.
Mm-hmm. So I came up with it recently. It's I just call it my happiness cheat sheets. It's 18 simple suggestions and lessons on how to love your life today, and they're just kind of little tidbits of lessons I've learned over the years that have really, you know, I've learned a lot, but these are probably the most important things that I've that I take with me on a daily basis. And I could elaborate on all of them, but I condensed it down into, I think it's about 3 or 4 pages. You know, and I suggest that people read it at their own pace. You know, you can take one lesson a day and really soak it in, or you can read the whole thing and, you know, refer back to it. But it's just 18 little tidbits that I use on myself and also teach my clients, just to help you live a happier life every day, because people take life way too seriously. They really do. And the more we realize it, the more room there is for a lot more joy in our everyday lives. So you can check it out.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you being here today and for sharing all of this with us. And yeah, just thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right.